interesting fact the other day.
Oh, I love interesting facts. Please go. Please go.
So my interesting fact for the day is, did you know that squirrels are actually the culprits of most... This is kind of sad, too. But they're the culprits for most power outages in the U.S. Like, when I say most, I mean like 98 to 99% of power... Well, maybe not that high. But really high.
Wow.
They're the culprits.
So they just jump. I guess they just hit the transformers and explode, and
they do. It's a very sad fact.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard that before?
I have actually. I couldn't think of squirrels, but there was an animal I remember. It was either that or birds, obviously.
But, so the last place that I lived, that would happen all the time because the power lines were super close together, and there were squirrels everywhere. And so you would hear a big pop, and it's like, oh.
Yep.
Another one bites the dust.
A poor squirrel. You would think they could do something, but there's really nothing you can do.
I know. It's kind of sad. And sorry, we're starting off with kind of a morbid topic. I thought that was going to be more of a fun fact, but it turned out to be a little bit more morbid than I was expecting.
That's true. That's okay. Fun fact of the day.
Crazy squirrels.
Well, speaking of squirrel, it's funny because I got an interesting tidbit and made me think of it. I've been having a lot of house flies this year because it's been so humid and hot, and I've been walking inside and outside constantly because I'm building a shed in the backyard. And so I bought this bug trap from or fly trap from Home Depot. It's not one of those like hanging from the ceiling ribbon things. It's like a stick. About 12 inches long, and it's got a cup at the bottom and a cup at the top, and you're supposed to put honey in it and anything and try to attract the flies, and it's really sticky. Well, after a week being inside, there was absolutely no flies stuck on this sticky thing. So I considered it a fail. So I was like, does this thing work at all whatsoever? So I put it outside, and I look out there. This was 2 days ago, and I look outside this morning, and it's covered in feathers.
Oh, no.
So something had a run-in with that thing.
Oh, no. That's not good.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Some poor bird was just like, oh, right. Look, some honey.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, no. This is a mistake. Oh, man. Yeah, I heard I've had a lot of flies this year as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually got... a pitcher plant. Have you ever seen those? It's one of the plants that eats bugs.
Oh,
and there was a fly in my place the other day, and then all of a sudden I was sitting at the table, and the pitcher plant, all I heard was this little like bzz, bzz, and I looked in one of the little funnels, and it had eaten the fly.
Oh wow!
So they really work.
I'm going to have to give me some of those, because obviously my sticky traps are only good for birds.
Well, Venus fly traps are really quite native to North Carolina.
Right.
Yeah. I think you're in South Carolina, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, so it's very close.
But you're just right across. But I think they're native to South Carolina, too.
Mm-hmm.
So they like that humid weather and stuff. So I'm sure you could find a couple native plants that would do really well.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, we got some humid going on this year, for sure. I think everywhere on the coast. I mean, just been another weird year. Every year we say, oh, it's been another weird weather. Well, every year it's it is.
Is that slightly alarming that it's like every year it just maybe gets a little bit weirder? And a little bit more.
I don't know. Is it, or is crazy? It because we're older and we're noticing it more, and we're turning into the weather talkers and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that is pretty sad. I feel like that's maybe a sign of older age, because that's what I tend to gravitate towards when I'm talking in conversation. Or maybe it's just because I'm boring. I don't know. Just talk about the weather.
It's the go-to. That's just how it works.
It is a go-to. It's good elevator talk.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, guys, I'm Paul Hanick. I'm the digital marketing director at Intercoastal Net Designs, or Vacation Rental and Vacation Rental website development company that specializes in building booking engine integrations with all your PMSs. We also do marketing like SEO, pay-per-click, email, social, and our job is to get you as many bookings as we possibly can.
Yes. And I am David Thompson. I am the director of social media for IC&D, and welcome to our podcast. We're doing pretty good. We've been more consistent with these, which I'm very happy about.
Yeah, ditto.
And they're getting a little bit more fun. Hopefully we've sort of changed up the formatting just a little bit, so hopefully you guys are liking a little bit of the new content.
Yeah. And we'll probably change it up again, you know, so you don't get bored.
Yeah, we're trying to keep it fresh.
Right,
keep
exactly.
It fresh.
Exactly.
So, yeah, but to start off this episode, I have a question for you, Paul.
All right, go.
My question for you is, what is one thing everyone overlooks when running Google AdWord campaigns? Give me just... Dude. One thing or two things. Dude. I'm fine with two things too.
That's the easiest softball I've ever been thrown. Oh, it's so easy. And it's funny too. You said AdWords, which it shows our age. So if you're ever interviewing a company and they reference Google AdWords, you know, it hasn't been called that in about 2 years. It's now Google Ads. So If anybody calls it AdWords, you know they've been in business for a while.
And you know there's some people out there correcting me.
But yeah, the biggest thing is not looking at your search terms. And what I mean by that is your search terms are the actual things that people type in and click on your ad. You'll be surprised at how much irrelevant information and irrelevant bids are in there, and the money that you're wasting that you don't even know about. So that's the biggest thing. And you know, it's easy to find. If you don't know how to, then just Google it. How to find my Google Ads search terms. It'll show you where. And just scroll through them. You know, it's going to show you. Let's say that they typed in. We'll go with a Winter Park Lodging is kind of the main one that you're going after, okay? But if you have your campaign set up to try to capture different variations of Winter Park Lodging, you could be showing up for Winter Park ski season or Winter Park weather, Winter Park elevation, Winter Park things to do. Yeah. So if you don't set your campaigns up right, or if you're going after you know, a different variation of a whole bunch of style keywords, then you could be actually bidding on that stuff. And believe it or not, no matter how well you write your ads, people are going to click on those things, no matter if it's relevant or not to them.
Yeah.
We see that all the time. So, yeah, definitely keep an eye on that. And then if you do see those words show up, add them to your negative keyword list. Those are the keywords that that the ads will never show up if somebody types in. So...
That's interesting.
That was an easy one, most definitely.
That is an easy one, but I feel like that's something that people probably wouldn't think to do.
Right, right. And we see it all the time. I mean, when we take over accounts, that's the first thing we look at, and we see just how much money is being blown on keywords that will never convert. I mean, you know, well, Paul, why don't I want to show up for Winter Park things to do? Well, where's your revenue with that? You know, you're not getting, you want bookings, right? You want to get as much traffic about bookings and rentals and vacations as possible, not about the things to do in the area.
Yeah, it's not qualified.
Right, right, yeah. Exactly.
Interesting.
Yep, yep.
Well, that's good. That's a good little, that's perfect. That was exactly what I was looking for.
Yay. All right, your turn, man.
Okay.
What are some no-nos when creating an email?
Oh, I've got so many. I don't have to do just one, right? I can do more than one.
I did say no nos.
Okay, cool. In a plural sense. Okay, plural so the first thing that I've seen that is a huge no-no is not having text in an email and possibly too many pictures. So I'll explain this just a little bit.
Okay.
So a lot of people will take and they'll design something in like Photoshop, or they'll design it in like Canva or something like that. And then they take it and they cut it up and they upload these pictures and they're like, that's my email. That's a huge, like, you're going straight to a spam folder with that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because no email client wants to see just pictures in an email. You've got to have text. In fact, you actually have to have more text than pictures in an email. And I think the ratio is like, I think it's an 80-20 ratio, but it could be the threshold could be 30%. So you don't want to have over 30% pictures in
right.
an email.
Right.
So too many pictures can be bad. Not enough text can be really bad. The other one that I would say would be don't use trigger words. So there's a whole big list of trigger words that will put you directly into a spam folder. A couple of them, just to throw them out, there's like sale or free or congratulations, incredible deal, cheap, exclusive deal. I mean, just like all these like, hey, click on this now, like really clickbaity stuff. Like right. you definitely don't want to use that stuff. And if you're curious about what clickbait subject lines are, I don't even know if I said don't use that in subject lines. Let me be more specific. Don't use it in subject lines. I'm just getting too excited about this.
Yeah, right, right.
If you're curious about what a clickbait subject line looks like, go to your spam folder and check out some of the subject lines of the emails that come through.
Yeah.
And that will be an indicator of what not to do. The next one would be don't write a book. So not having enough text. Too much text. If you have like a huge long email, it's just a big block of text.
Yeah,
you're not going to get the whole point of the whole point of an email is to get traffic to a website so that you can make a booking, right?
Mm-hmm.
So having too much where it's just a book, you're just going to lose people, and they're not going to care.
Right.
Don't make your subject line too long. So I think max is what. Correct me if I'm wrong. Like 35 characters.
Yeah, it depends on the email client they're using. But
especially mobile
your phone,
too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you don't want it too long. And then my last one, then I'll stop because I could just keep going.
I know,
I could
right?
keep rolling with this.
Yeah.
make sure your email. This touches on what we just said about mobile, but make sure your email is mobile friendly. So. I mean, you definitely want to make sure that it's friendly to all the, 30 to 31 email clients that are out there.
Yeah.
But you also want to make sure that it's mobile friendly on all of those platforms as well. So, for example, Google has a desktop version, but they've also got a mobile version. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that it's fluent on everything.
Yeah.
Emails can be a big undertaking to make sure that everything works and you've got good content and all that. But those are a couple no-nos. So. Yeah.
Good stuff. Good list.
Yeah. Good stuff.
I like that.
So moving on, let's face it. Work can be a bit rough sometimes, and sometimes you just need a good laugh. So brace yourselves for some cheesy marketing dad jokes. I feel like this is appropriate to call these some dad jokes.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I actually really like these. I got some good laughs. I'll do the first one, and then you can do the second one, and then I'll finish up the last one.
Okay.
So how did Yoda get his first lead?
How?
He used the sales force. It's so cheesy.
Oh, man.
Wow. Okay, your turn. Go ahead.
All right. This one might need a little bit of explaining, but I'm going to go through it first.
Okay.
How do SEO experts celebrate improved search rankings?
I don't know how.
Surprise parties.
Okay, you might need to explain a little bit for people listening.
So, a SERP, S-E-R-P, is an abbreviation for Search Engine Result Page. So when you go to Google and you type something in, the next page that comes up is the list of search results. It is the search engine result page. So that's a big, techie marketing term that we use. And when you combine it with dad jokes, it makes it even better.
Oh, we hope you guys are laughing at these.
Or think we're idiots. Either way, I think you're entertained. You got to be.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah. Even if you're just laughing at us, that's okay. Mm-hmm.
That's cool, too.
Okay, last one. Knock knock.
Who's there?
Our new ebook.
Our new ebook who?
We only ask that you fill out the following 14 fields for a free copy of this punchline.
That's so true.
Yep. Okay, I felt like that one was pretty relevant in our industry because there's just let's face it, there's so many fields.
Yeah, I got one the other day. It was a white paper that I was really interested in, and I even it's one of those tricky ones because it had it gave you give me your first name and your email and we'll send it to you. So I did that, and then as soon as you click that button, it pops open and says, "Please provide us more info." And there's like 13 more fields in there that I had to fill out. And immediately I was like, nope, gone.
Like, I was interested, but I'm not that interested.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So don't do that. Get the information that you think you need, but don't overwhelm people with having to type stuff in.
Yeah.
Please.
Don't do that. It's just frustrating. It's very frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, there is actually a strong correlation between the number of fields that are in any sort of contact form and the submission rate.
Oh, submission rate. Okay. Yeah.
Of that contact form. So, you know, if you have too many, then your submissions go down. But if you have just a few, make it short, sweet, and easy, then you'll get more submissions. And that's why, like, I've been preaching these past few webinars and podcasts and everything that we have a hiccup on the vacation rental side of the booking engines, because you know we require all of these fields, name, address, phone number, credit card info, all that stuff. Whereas if we could just accept PayPal or Venmo or just any sort of one click transaction style, that would be so much easier on the user that we actually get our bookings up with mobile.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, and I feel like that's why some of the OTAs are so successful.
Right.
Because it's so easy. They've got all your information, and it's easy to just go back in with Airbnb, and it's like pretty close to one click. There's probably a couple more in there, but
yeah,
pretty close.
But at least you don't have to click every form field and put in the same stuff that you have.
Yeah.
Over and over and over.
Yeah, it's annoying.
You shouldn't have to work to make a vacation.
I shouldn't have to work to make my vacation. It should just appear for me.
Appear.
That's, I really do think that's what consumers think.
Yeah, you're going like here.
It should just, why can't it just happen without me having to do anything?
Right.
Okay, tell me if you have this struggle too. And then we can move on.
Yeah,
but
just
I've got in like
from dad jokes very quickly.
So, I've got autofill
mm-hmm.
text on my computer. So like it like stores like credit cards and like information and stuff. But it never populates the correct information, or it puts it in the wrong field, and that's
right.
So frustrating.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I can be techie if you want and tell you why, but
go ahead and tell me why. You've piqued my curiosity.
So it's up to the web developer to name the fields correctly. So let's say that you have a field, and this is all in the code. It's not really on the actual page. It's in the code. If you have a field called phone number, and you have a field called phone, and then you have a field called phone underscore number. Those are three different fields. So if you, let's say that you put in your information in your auto populate whatever, and you hit that save button to save it for next time. If that form field was like phone number without any spaces, all lowercase, it might not translate to the next time you fill out another form on another website, because that form field could be phone underscore number. So it has to match pretty significantly. Now that's a very dumbed down example. I think that's like Google or Chrome and some of these autofills are good enough to understand the correlation between those. But there are other times that you run into that issue where the fields are too not even similar, so it doesn't put them in appropriately in the right spots.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There you go. I learned something. I want to say that I kind of knew that just a little bit.
Yeah, I had that inkling,
like the form
right.
fields, but I didn't know that that's. I guess maybe I didn't make the correlation that that's what like Google is looking at. I don't know. Yeah. You learn something new every day.
Learn something new.
That's fantastic. Well, I will tell you what I really want to talk about today.
Okay.
What I really want to talk about is drive markets. So how far would you say a drive market is? Would you say that's like, is that under 8 hours? Is it like under 10 hours? Like, what do you think a normal drive market is?
Depends on your family and
how long you can stand being in the car with them.
Exactly. Yeah, because when I was growing up, our drive market was within 12 hours.
Okay.
You know, so if we could drive there within 12 hours, and we usually, but that's still taking stops and whatnot, then that was a drive market to us. These days, I would think anything 6 to 8 hours would be a drive market. Okay. That might be pushing it, but most drive market traffic is, I would say, 4 hours.
Okay. About four. That's pretty good. I would say 4 hours is a pretty good drive market.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. And I would consider locals too, like drive market, like
that's an
obvious thing, but I don't think people really consider locals to be in the pool of vacationers that would want to necessarily stay there. So I'm going to use one of our clients out of Aruba, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They had a lot of that. They were doing like basically a staycation over the past couple months with some locals. And so they had some like beachside resorts, and they were like, since no one could come in to Aruba, they were basically promoting like, hey, if you want a change in scenery, you can always come from your house and you can stay at the resort.
All right.
So keep that in mind too. That might be
staycation style.
Backyard sort of drive market.
All right.
Can you target drive markets with AdWord campaigns?
Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can definitely go geographic, and target specifically. See, I mean, the best way to do it would be to create a completely different campaign and only target those specific drive markets that you know are the most profitable. And you can figure that out by looking in your analytics history and seeing where most of your traffic comes from. And most of the drive market, and it's important too to think about how COVID has changed it, because we do we are seeing, like, I don't want to say shorter distances traveled, but the drive market's gotten a little bit different, I guess you could say, because of the last minute approach to how people are booking. So that 8 hour drive market that I was just referencing, you know, that might be truncated a bit now down to the 4 and 6. Just because of the last minute having to plan stuff like that, or even short stays, so it's a bit different. But yeah, you can easily target different geographic regions and only target those, and target people that are interested in coming to the area. And I know the cool thing with Facebook is you can actually target people that have visited the area as well.
Yes.
So that's pretty cool. Not after a long period of time though, right? It's more like within a couple months or within a month you can target them, which is kind of useless for us as vacation rental marketers, but
yeah, but it might be I feel like that might be a little bit more handy now, you know. Because people, I feel like...
They're coming and going constantly.
They're coming and going. Mm-hmm. So instead of taking one bigger vacation, and I've got 2 points to add to what you said earlier. I'll get to those. But instead of taking a bigger vacation, people are taking shorter vacations, but they're taking more of them.
Sure,
so
right.
You might have someone doing like a drive market and doing a weekend stay, and they're like, well, that was good. Let's go back next month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you got to think about, a lot of people are still indoors. A lot of people working from home. They're not
school
getting
started.
Out. They're not. Yeah, school started, and kids are doing Zoom calls, and parents are having to adjust from that. And everyone's like, "We need a vacation.
Get out of here."
Yeah. So, you said something interesting that's I wanted to touch on real quick with the audiences, and some people might have not picked up on it, which is creating two separate campaigns.
Right. Right.
And the reason we do that is that we can keep the data separate.
Right.
Because you can really, once you start mixing those two different audience sets, because you got to think about it, your drive market audience is going to be completely different from anyone else.
Right. Right.
Basically
yeah.
everyone else.
Yeah. Exactly. So. Especially if you're a fly to and drive destination, you know.
Yeah.
It's, Yeah, you can even break that down. Like if you're just a drive-to market, you know, you can. I would experiment with breaking down. You know, your 1 to 6 hour drive or 1 to 4 hour drives, and then break down your 6 to 8 hour drives, and just keep it different. Because you're gonna have probably a different message. I mean, if you can correlate your data and look at it. I won't say correctly, but to try to extrapolate why people are coming and how long they're staying from each like drive destination, that'll help you write the correct ads in order to get them to your site and to book. So yeah, going in that route, that's probably a good way to really target people appropriately and make them click and convert.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the amount of segmentation, which is kind of the beauty of advertising now, the amount of segmentation that you can do, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you could really break it down into some really segmented groups and figure out where your sweet spot is,
mm-hmm.
you know? And, I mean, A-B tests within those groups and all sorts of stuff. You can have loads of data.
Oh, yeah.
Right at your fingertips.
Data is
your beautiful
friend.
Is that? So.
Yeah. So tell me about the let's go about the social aspect of it. I mean, I kind of alluded to it a little bit, but
yeah,
give me some more like how I can target on the social channels these drive markets.
Yeah. So again, you go off location, so you can start with location, but really look at within different locations, you're going to be targeting possibly different interest groups. So I would say if I were building out a couple different drive market campaigns, I would probably dig into the data a little bit more and say, okay, what are some of the interests compared to this location and this location, and how do they differ? Because you're going to find that one location, maybe they're interested in more like leisure travel and food, and then maybe this group or this audience in this separate location is more interested in shopping. And you can find mm-hmm. those data points out.
Right.
So that would be something that I would say, really dig into that, because the amount of targeting that you have on a platform like Facebook or Instagram is
mm-hmm. is it's much better than Google.
Yeah.
It's much better than Google's.
Yeah.
It's creepy how good it is.
Well, I mean, and I've said this before, we put everything on Facebook. I mean, we talk about like what we had for breakfast and, mm-hmm. you know, we put all of our pictures on there.
I mean, right,
God
right.
forbid there shouldn't be a picture uploaded on there.
Right.
Know? So, yep.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
The amount of,
I don't know if this is kind of a side tangent, but have you ever watched The Great Hack?
No,
it's regarding you would absolutely love it. It's about Cambridge Analytica, and this was it's basically how they were able to use social media and Facebook as an influence for the campaign when Trump was elected.
Wow.
Yeah. So there was a big thing. It's just a documentary about it, and one person speaking out and standing up for what she believed, and you know, kind of calling this company out about what they were doing, and using the data points, and they were able to target people that were on the fence about whether or not to vote for Hillary or vote for Trump, and they were able to serve, you know, I don't want to say propaganda style ads or anything, but they were able to tip the scales a little bit, according to this documentary, in Trump's favor. So
yeah,
it was just very, very interesting. A very long documentary. But if anybody's out there interested in that stuff, then it's called The Great Hack. Yeah, it's about Facebook. And soon, you know, soon after that's when we started getting all of the, you know, different ways we could target taken away.
I was going to say, I remember that because the right after that, all the policies and regulations became way more strict. So I remember Cambridge right. Analytica. I think I said that right.
Yeah.
Because like now, like used to, you could serve an ad in the real estate, like an ad about real estate or property, and like it was no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But now it has to be under special ad category.
All right.
Same thing with political ads. Mm-hmm. They have a special ad category for political style advertising. Right. And they took away tons of targeting methods for one, just in general. And then two, once you go into the special ad category, like it's super limited. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, makes sense.
Very limited.
Makes sense.
But anyway, yeah, no, that's interesting. I will have to check that documentary out. It sounds very interesting. I'm always into those.
But yeah, to go back to your before I tangented, the you said something about selling the experience, and I think that's very important to point out again. You know, if you're doing social media ads and you're going after a new clientele that may not have even been to your destination before, I mean, you've got your hands full because A, you have to sell your destination, and B, you have to get them to stay with you. Yes. All within that one first impression click from Facebook, you know. Yeah. So it's more difficult to capture that audience, but you're going to have a much larger or much smaller return on ad spend. But you know, think about the exponential growth of that guest that had that good experience that will come back again next year and tell their friends, and you know, keep that residual income year after year with you if you do it right. So that's the part that I think vacation rental managers and companies, it's hard for them to track stuff like that. You know, that very first, how did this guest that's been staying with me for 15 years, how do they first find out about me? And was that profitable? You know, maybe it was your brochure that you quit printing. You don't know. I mean, that's the thing. I think that's the hang up too with, you know, with our data and being able to track, you know, our clientele and our businesses. So that's my
There's
2 cents.
Well, I'm gonna add to that just a little bit.
Ooh, make it 4 cents.
There's always a lot of data points that are missing when it comes to connecting the dots. And social is always, unless someone can find a way to bridge the gap with users going from a social platform to another, you know, another, like going from their phone to a desktop, if someone can bridge that to track someone, then that would be so valuable to be able to see, because right now it's like we can't really connect the dots. The other thing I wanted to touch on too is, don't be mistaken, running ads on Google and running social media ads are two different animals. You cannot take the same mentality and apply it to both.
Right.
So when I say selling the experience, one of the strategies I've taken in the past with some clients is, we talk about, oh my gosh, look at this place, isn't it just beautiful, this place is beautiful. We don't even talk about vacation rentals. We're not even talking about that. We're talking about this place. It's a beautiful place. Wouldn't you love to be here? Can't you just see yourself here?
Right.
And then they say, yes, I can. And then they click, and then it's like, well, we can make that happen. You know, you should book a trip here, and here's how it's going to be so easy and inexpensive for you.
Right.
And so that's kind of the mentality, is you spark the interest with the experience of going to a place, because no one vacations just so they can stay at your vacation rental. That's just a means to the end. Mm-hmm. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's like a way for them to sleep and prepare food and, like, you know, right, have shelter. They're there for the experience. Yeah. They're there for the beach. They're there for the mountains. They're there for the skiing. They're there for, you know, the boating or the fishing or whatever it is. They're not specifically there for the vacation rental. So I think that's where maybe some of the hang up and confusion is when people are setting up ads, because they're trying to make that sell right on a platform like Facebook, and it's like, it doesn't work that way. You need to sell the experience. Mm-hmm. You need to sell what's it going to be like when I actually get there. So anyway, that's my 2 cents. Facebook's, now we've made it 4 cents. That's more valuable.
Yeah, no, it's double.
I don't even know what next. What are we talking about next? What's another point for drive markets?
Oh man,
what else?
I think that one of the major hangups is, and you know, we haven't really talked about this too much, but it's the shorter duration stays, and that shorter duration stay is like people that are wanting to do and you just said it, you know, people that come on various occasions rather than one big vacation per year. You know, it's kind of where things are going these days. You know, stay a weekend and then go back home. Yeah. You know, stay a long weekend, you know, take Monday off from work and then go back home. The having to pivot and instead of forcing people to take that week stay, you know, there's companies that are having to give up their, we've done this for 20 years, forcing, you know, Saturday to Saturday check-ins and to fill gaps because, you know, people aren't able to take that that longer vacation anymore.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, do you feel like vacation rental managers, not to call anyone out, but do you feel like vacation rental managers might need to be a little bit more flexible when it comes to stay periods?
It depends on if you're not filling up, then yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if it's one of those to where, you know, if you've got the right marketing in place, if you're ranking well, if you've got traffic, and you know, then it's you're still not filling up, then you have to wonder, okay, so they're getting to my website, this is qualified traffic, and but they're not booking. Why? So, you know, we actually are able to implement site search tracking as well on our websites, and we can see when people are, what dates people are putting in to your calendar, and track that in Google Analytics. So we'll be able to see, like, are they wanting 3 nights, are they wanting 5 nights, what dates are the most popular. It's super interesting seeing that data now, because you know, we went from, you know, in January, February, March, it was we're booking for June, July, August, but now it's pretty rare to see bookings that go out past 30 days, or people looking for anything past 30 days. What's most interesting too that we've noticed recently is the number of 2021 searches that are going on. So,
really?
Yeah, people are booking these, wanting to, you know, they're hoping and praying and, you know, trying to wish away COVID. And in 2021, yes, it'll be over and I'll be able to have a nice, relaxing, long vacation. I'm going to go ahead and book that now.
Huh.
So that's kind of what we're seeing is, you know, if you're being laxed about having your rates out there for 2021, get on it, because we're seeing a lot more people wanting to book. And if, you know, your competitor has rates and you don't, that's no good.
Yeah, you're kind of behind the ball on that one.
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, Walmart's going to be putting out the Christmas stuff soon. And
yeah, I know.
It's that same mentality. You know, people are looking for 2021, and it's
crazy.
Still summertime.
Normally people wait till, like, November time frame, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah, that's when most of the, you know, historically, that's when the grunt of people do their searching. We're not talking about repeat guests that book the same units every year and whatnot, but this is for, you know, people that start to actually do their planning. Starts in November, and then just keeps going up from there, and then usually January is the big push. So it's gonna be weird going.
Yeah,
2021 is gonna be a very odd year.
I was gonna say, I'm very curious to see what January of 2021 looks like, because historically we have seen a lot of, that's when a lot of bookings happen for the year, because we think it's because family gets together during Christmas time and everyone's like, all right, where are we going this year? You know? Mm-hmm. And then they make the plans and they book it. But it'll just be interesting to see what the data trend does for 2021.
Oh, yeah.
This also popped into my head too. I think you might have touched on it. I'm not for sure. But and this is more of a gut feeling, I truly think that vacationers expect an extremely easy booking process when it comes to shorter stays.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely.
And so that might be, I don't want to say hurting vacation rental managers, but we were talking earlier about the 14 fields.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's so much information that you have to put in when you're booking with, let's just say a vacation rental manager that you've never, or a vacation rental company that you've never stayed with. Mm-hmm. They've got to collect all that information. They have to. I mean, they have to. But still, it sort of makes the booking process just slightly more difficult.
Sure.
So, and that might be where, this is just a guess, but that might be where some of the OTAs might be winning with some of the shorter stay stuff, is just the process is easy and people expect that.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yep. Make it as easy as possible. That's pretty much it.
So, well, I don't have anything else to say on drive markets, but I feel like that's a pretty good.
Yeah, it was
definitely some good thoughts.
Yeah. All right, we're going to move on real quick to just a company shout out. I don't know. This is not a vacation rental company. This is actually a vendor that we've liked for quite a while. They do great work, and it's called True Place. They started out, if you've been in the industry as long as I have, used to be Mouse on House, and basically they had virtual floor plans that when you hovered over the floor plan of your unit, it would show you a picture of the bedroom, and then you hover over the kitchen, showed you a picture of the bedroom, or of the kitchen. But they've grown so much and transformed into video and virtual reality and drone footage and a whole bunch of stuff that's just
cool.
Completely, I don't want to say mind blowing, but it's pretty mind blowing. That the amount of things that you can do to showcase your units and your vacation rental companies, or even go to your vacation rental manager. If you're an individual owner out there and say, hey, can I get Mouse on House, or not Mouse on, can I get True Place? So I definitely recommend looking into True Place and seeing what they have to offer, and you know, get some pricing and seeing what it's all about, especially if you haven't heard of them before. And we integrate with them quite easily. It's easy to put on the website, and there's fields in your property management system that you can fill out and put the links in for the floor plans and the pictures and the videos and stuff like that, and they instantly go on your website. So makes it simple.
Cool.
And got photographers everywhere, all across the United States. So shout out to True Place.
Awesome. Yeah, talk about adapting with technology with the drone stuff and the 3D and all that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yep, yep.
So, well, I didn't have anything else. Do you have anything else?
I'm good. Appreciate you listening, guys. If you need anything from us, make sure you follow us on Facebook, Intercoastal Net Designs. Hit us up on Twitter at Intercoastal. Podcast at iCoastalNet.com is our email. Shoot us one. Thanks again, guys. Talk to you soon.
Till next time. We'll